Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the PVD Cast. I'm your host, John Orlando, and ladies and gentlemen, joining me here at my house, Casa de la Orlando, the man who is the current OCW Ohio Heritage Champion, Dark Star Matt Taylor. Matt, welcome to the PVD Cast.
Thank you very much.
I hope this podcast goes a little bit smoother than the other ones you did this morning.
Oh, God, I hope so, man. Literally on hold for 30 minutes listening to these two idiots battle back and forth who are supposed to be hosting, saying, I can't hear you, I can't hear you. And then they just canceled the whole thing. So it can only go up, you know.
Well, I can promise you that that will not happen here. Anyways,
excellent.
But before we jump into some things, I just want to get one house cleaning item out of the way, one small one real quick. Last week, I decided to try something different with this podcast. Instead of talking predominantly about professional wrestling, I had my good friend Brian on. We talked a little bit about movies. We did sprinkle pro wrestling in there, and I was really worried that a lot of the usual listeners would complain and just, you know, really tear me a new one. But they were very supportive. I got some really nice comments from people that were saying, you know, even though it wasn't as heavy on the pro wrestling, it's still, you came across as that's one of your passions and you were passionate about it and your buddy Brian was. So I appreciate all the good comments. Like I said, I'm learning as I go and I love to hear from the fans and or the people that listen, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. So I'd say keep it up. But all right, let's jump into it. I guess I'm going to, before we even start, a couple of weeks ago, Jeremy Madrox was on here. I talked about the last time that I saw an IWA show. And that was like 2004, 2005. And I stated that it was down in Lancaster. It was at the fairgrounds.
I like where this is going.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that all I remember about the shows, I remember a few things. I remember Robbie Starr took on Matt Mason. And I remember Vader made an appearance.
How did I know that's where that was going? Okay.
Now, with all due respect, I did not remember who the opponents were, and Jeremy corrected me and said, no, that you were one of the opponents. Is that true?
That is 100% true, actually.
Okay. All right.
It is a very funny story. I was 18 at the time. I had actually, that was my first match back. I sprained my knee, like, a month and a half before that.
Okay.
And I get there, and Wild Bull, in his infinite wisdom, says, your first match back after spraining your knee is going to be against Vader.
Did you like shit yourself right then and go, oh, man.
He said, he laughed about it. He's like, I thought you would, you know, like it. The thing is cool. No, I didn't think it was cool at all. I was scared out of my mind. I'm not going to lie to you. Literally, I went, after that, after I found that out, I went and found Vader. He was hitting down. And he stood up to shake my hand. I came up to maybe his belly button. Literally, the man was twice my size. And then it was me, Bones Dudley, and Sugar Daddy. And Sugar Daddy was actually my saving grace. Because after I said hi to Vader, he came up and said, hi, Vader. This is my first match. I'm green. And Vader said, oh, excellent.
Oh, my God. Seriously?
Yep. And and then Bones Dudley is, you know, whatever, he's Bones Dudley, so he sucks. So Vader pretty much, whatever talking we did in the match, he did with me. So he just figured that I was the only one that actually knew, you know, what I was doing. So he had me start the match with him, and scared out of my mind. He goes to, we were circling, we go to lock up, and he, as fast as he can, balls up his fist and swings at my face and stops, like, within an inch of my nose. And then very loudly yells, oh, that would have hurt. And I was scared out of my mind at that point. I was like, yeah. So I'm freaking out. I sell the crowd, and I turn back around. And I get hit with what I can only describe as, like, a tree trunk, but it was the man's arm. So he's bashing me back forward, bam, 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 hitting me everywhere to doing his Vader thing. And he whips me off the ropes, gives me a clothesline in my face, knocks out half my feeling. And I hear this loud ringing noise. And I'm by my corner, but I'm not attempting to tag. But the only thing that that like clicks me out of this ringing is Vader's loud voice yelling, don't you dare tag. So then I very loudly yell back, "I'm not tagging, sir." And then at that point, I think he knows I'm kind of messed up. And then he very gingerly picks me up and goes, "Are you okay?" Yeah. Says, "Okay." Picks me up, choke slams me, and then tells me to tag out. So I tag in. My saving grace in this match, which was Sugar Daddy, and Sugar Daddy comes in. The very first thing Vader does is open hand slaps him in the ear, ruptures Sugar Daddy's eardrum, blood coming out of his ear, and to this day that man, I think he lost 80% of his hearing. And so
did Sugar Daddy wrestle again for the IWA, or was he done?
I never saw him there. I know he wrestled in, like, the Cleveland area, but, yeah, that...
Well, the story, and I'll repeat the story for your benefit, because the story that I shared on the podcast was there was only maybe 30 people there, if that.
If that, yeah. There was no one. That's being nice.
Yeah, there was no one there. There was,
like, 25, yeah.
And I went with Big White, who was a friend of mine who had worked PWC and FIW with me, and Big White's a very... boisterous and loud gentleman, as am I. And so we were sitting way up in the top of the bleachers.
That was you guys?
I remember the story!
I remember those guys. Tell the story.
We were up there, and I think maybe it was you that started the match. I don't remember when we started doing this, but we started going, "Fuck him up, Vader, fuck him up." And
you guys scared me shitless.
I'm sorry, dude. I'm gonna apologize. No, it's fine.
Whatever. Like, I appreciate that experience now, but at the time, oh my god, man.
Because do you remember? I remember we were chanting that, and we were so loud. And I remember that Vader turned to that side of the ring to us and looked up and goes, "Hey, there are children here." And we stopped, and Joe and I looked at each other, and we go, "We're sorry, Vader." And I think he chuckled at
that. Yes, he did.
So.
He did. You guys were actually in that same area, because we started that match, and I think I was in there with Vader for like 5 minutes, and then in that same area of those guys, they yelled, like, "Kill the other guys," or something like that.
Yeah,
and
there
then
was
Vader,
some
that's
other...
when Vader, that's when Vader finally, you know, had me tag out at that point. But
yeah, there was some other group of dudes down below, too. Yeah.
It was that whole area, you guys. I don't understand why the loudest part of the crowd was 50 feet away at the top of the bleachers.
I have no idea. Yeah. Oh, man.
That was my experience of being in the ring with a world champion at the time. That was a lot of fun.
All right, well, let's back up. Let's back up quite a bit. How'd you get started in wrestling?
Well, like most people in this area, I was watching a episode of IWA on public access. They had a commercial for their school and everything. So me and my friend called it, and they told us that we could actually start at the age of 8. It was like 8 to 18, their kids class, which was incredibly dumb.
Incredibly stupid.
You should not start training until you're 18. I don't care. I know some people say 16 is fine, but no, 18. But me being 13 and starting was incredibly stupid. I couldn't really comprehend, you know, anything at that point in time. But with that being said, I wouldn't change it for anything at all, because at that point, you know, I got there and I met Henry Madrox, I met Kyle, and those guys pretty much they liked me right away and kind of protected me, I guess, because everybody else got a lot of crap there, but they took care of me and they really, you know, helped me along and trained me pretty well. But the kids class was it was fun. That was a experience that I wouldn't trade for anything, but. I wouldn't have my kid do it, and I wouldn't recommend any other kid doing it.
Right, yeah, and I mean, we've talked, Jeremy and I talked a little bit about the good and the bad of that particular class, you know, in the terms of the fact that you were learning a lot of the basics, but who predominantly trained you? Like, when you got to the kids' class, at that time, was it more of the own students doing some of the training, or was there still Bull kind of involved?
Bull, I never, honestly, I never met Bull.
Really?
Yeah, my, who was my, I got there and I did my tryout with somebody. I can't remember who right now. And then I signed my contract with Sam, with Cyrus Poe. And then I did all that. And then Cyrus Poe was actually the trainer of the kids class. But Jeremy and Kyle pretty much ran it from what I can really remember. And they really just kind of... I mean, Sam was there to kind of give direction and guidance, but Jeremy and Kyle were in there and showing us and teaching us all that. So it was pretty much the kids teaching the kids, which, you know, not a good thing.
No, no.
Not at all. Not, you know...
So what was your first match in the YWA? Do you remember what your first match was?
I remember exactly what my first match was. I was a month in. Okay. Also... awesome, you know, brilliant. Month in, you know, I knew everything at that point. It was against my buddy, who I started with, Sam Brimstone. And I thought of the brilliant idea of I'm going to call myself Survivor, because I'm 13, and that's brilliant. Because it's an awesome wrestling name.
Wait a minute, time out. Survivor?
Survivor.
Just one name.
That's all I needed.
Did you come out the Eye of the Tiger?
I did not.
Oh, no. Man. Okay.
What did I come out to? I don't even remember my first song. I know it didn't, like, the name, like, I was a kid. I was 13.
Well, I understand that.
Nothing pertained at all. I think I had on jeans and a ripped up 311 shirt, and...
And that was your gimmick.
That was my gimmick, man. I was Survivor at that point. That was awesome.
Sadly, lots of adults still have that same gimmick.
I know, it's really messed up, right? Really messed up. At
least guys that are 32, still wear that same gear. Anyways, I digress. So, how would that match go? Was it... Now, the YWA, again, it was one of their exhibitions, right?
Yeah.
So was it before one of the IWA shows?
No, it was at the gym, which...
Okay.
The gym, I don't know, like... I'm sure you've had, you know, like, Jeremy on here. I don't know if they've ever, like, described it.
And,
like,
I don't think that it's ever been described. Go right ahead.
All
right,
the IWA gym. It was this two-story building. It was on the second floor, and it was pretty much, if you saw, like, Stu Hart's dungeon, I think his dungeon was nicer. But the ceiling was maybe 8 feet high, and, I mean, there were, like, bleachers and stuff in there, and there was an office and the shower for some reason, and there was a locker room area and everything, but the ceiling was 8 feet high, and then the ring they had, like, either specially made or modified was, like, a foot off the ground. So, at that point, then you have another 5 or so feet of ropes. So, really, there's, like, 6 foot of clearance in, you know, in that ring, and if you wanted to do anything off the top rope in that ring, you had to pretty much hunch over and then jump off. And that's why, to this day, like, if you see myself, Jeremy Madrox, or Matt Hansen, or anybody who really started in that gym, we all, when we take suplexes, kind of like start to tuck our feet because we don't want to kick the ceiling that's not there anymore. But that's how we learned. So we have to try really hard to, you know, extend our legs and everything. But it was, you know.
Well, two questions about the gym, because yeah. I'd been there for a show or mm-hmm. two.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah.
One, anybody ever used the shower? Or was it, like, so disgusting, like, you're like, never mind, I'm just going to go home sweaty and disgusting as it is?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
Not, you know, after shows, but I remember, I'll be damned, he stayed at the gym for a while, and we would randomly go there for, you know, practice sessions, and we would come in, and he'd just be showering. That's cool.
Yeah, he lived in the gym for a while. Let's just be honest. That's what he did. The rumor was, like, 2 or 3 months, he stayed there. Mm-hmm. Okay, the second question...
I love Albie, though, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Great dude. Great dude.
He actually got... I think he got married today.
I'm pretty really?
Sure. Yep, so...
Wow.
Albie, if you're listening, congratulations.
Yes, congrats. I love you, guys. The second question, with the ring being modified, mm-hmm. did that make taking bumps harder?
Not really. I mean,
no. It was no different than say the OCW ring or any other ring. Even though
there's a big difference.
Well, I mean, I get what you mean, but I mean, like in distance, idea that it's closer down to the floor, that it does not impact any worse or any better than any other ring.
Not that I can remember. I've been in as sad as this may sound. I've been in rings that are worse than that ring, and that ring was really bad. So,
yeah. Anyway, so the first match, YWA. Did you go over?
No.
No.
I feel like you and Jeremy talked about this. in somewhere?
No, I swear, this one we didn't talk about. I knew about the Vader story. I do not know about this story. I will freely admit.
My first match was against my buddy I started with, and we started wrestling with, you know, each other on our trampolines and everything.
Sure,
and,
sure, right.
And we would actually make rings in his basement and stuff. And we would, like,
sure,
we'd film that. So we've been wrestling, you know, each other forever. So that was just, you know, one more thing. We might as well have our first professional, you can't really see my air quotes, but professional match.
He did make air quotes.
Against each other. And it was a good match. It started out bad. It started out, we had everything planned out and everything. We went to lock up, and for some reason he decided he wanted to kick me, and his foot got tangled in my 311 shirt, and he fell on his butt. And, so that's kind of how it started, but then we recovered nicely, and I do remember we ended up getting a spot in that match where we got a YWA chant, so that was pretty cool. But the match ended, which at that time I thought that was awesome that we actually did that, but the match ended with a returning to the kids class Jeremy Madrox beating us down with a pipe, and then I'm pretty sure you'll have to ask him. That's when he debuted the RID. His hold.
Oh, the folding submission. The folding submission hold.
Where he basically wraps your legs around his waist, puts his head in you know, his armpit, and wraps your arms and pretty much folds you in half to where your knee is in your mouth and you can't breathe. And I remember him putting me in that, and it felt like a minute. It may have been longer, I don't know, but I remember there was a point where I was like, I'm really freaked out, I may die here. I can't breathe. But yeah, that's pretty much how it ended. It was fun.
So how long were you with the YWA? You were there till you were 18, obviously, right? Did you work other promotions as well at that time when you were in YWA? Did you branch out a little bit?
Pretty much from the time I was 13 till I was 16, I was there. Mm-hmm. And then I took a year off. And then I came back. No, that's wrong. Till I was from 13 to 15, and then I took a year off. I came back when I was 16, and I was doing some promotions off and on here and everything. And then the YWA finally folded the first time at that point. I think I was 17, okay. So I had to wait an entire year until I turned 18, and then I started with the IWA.
All right. So once you got into the IWA, what's some of the highlights that you had with your career in the IWA? Or low lights. I mean, highlights, low lights, whatever. Matt Mason claimed his podcast was very negative. He's like, ah, thanks, John. It was tell me about ECW. Tell me about the WWE. Yeah, thanks for pointing out all my failures. So, you know, I just want to make sure that we have the highs and the lows.
You know what? I went into the IWA really kind of excited for it. I saw everybody who was negative and down on it, because obviously everybody was older than me and they went through it already, like Jeremy, Matt, and all them. And I've heard all the stories, all the, you know, everybody getting out of there, jumping ship to FIW and all that. Mm-hmm. But I went into the whole thing excited, and I was, you know, it's something new. I'm finally 18. I can go out there. My first show was in Lancaster.
Okay.
It wasn't the Vader thing, though.
Okay.
Thank God. It was against Bones Dudley, which was, you know, whatever. That match was actually good. I remember I finished that match by spearing him, and he went flying through the ropes, so that was kind of cool. But then, for absolutely no reason, mind you, Bull told me that I was going to do a run-in later on in that show. And they tag match main event, and it was for the first time he built it. I'm not sure if this is accurate. For the first time since WrestleMania 5, Rhythm and Blues taking on Jimmy Malloy and Devlin Anderson. For some reason, this kid who's its first show, it was my job to run in, so I had to. I grabbed Honky Tonk Man's guitar and I brought it in. I handed it to Jimmy, and I held Honky Tonk Man, then Honky Tonk Man moved, and I got hit with the guitar, and then he husted it and all that. But my favorite memory of that night, though, is Greg Valentine. He showed up there very sober. half hour later, he was not.
What? How does that happen?
I don't know how that happened, but he showed up there. You know, he was like, yeah, he was real friendly. He was talking to us, mm-hmm. and he's like, I'll be right back. And he never came back from that trip. A completely different person came back. And
so where did he go? Did he, like, disappear?
He went to the bathroom or something like that.
And somewhere. And I don't know the fairgrounds?
Yes.
Okay.
So I don't know. I don't know what he did, but he took something good. Because he was on a completely different planet. And I remember waiting for my spot in this match. And he got Devlin Anderson down on all fours. And I'm going to describe this the best way that I can. He grabs Devlin's wrist and arm, and he spreads his arm out. Grabs his other arm, spreads his arm out.
This sounds rapey.
It's getting rapey, trust me. He kicks his legs out. Now, they're both spread eagle on the ground. His crotch is in Devlin's ass, and they're just kind of just laying there for an awkward 25 to 30 seconds. And then I see Devlin kind of looking up at Jimmy like, please do something, please come kick him. What I can only describe happened here is he was so high that he forgot. He knew what he was doing at first. And then about halfway through, he forgot. So he was just laying there. And then all of a sudden, he just kind of stands up, stomps him, and then tags out. Like, we watched a 30-second rape in this match is what happened. And then, like, at that point, I didn't know what to do. I couldn't, you know.
Oh, man. How was Honky during this?
He was Honky Tonk. Honky Tonk Man, I've had lots. I think I've been on 4 or 5 shows with him. Honky Tonk Man is always the Honky Tonk Man.
Oh, he is. I know. I've been on two or three shows with him. We brought him in for OCW 2 shows, I think. And then there was another independent show that was on with him. Man, yeah, he's just amazing in the back. Like, he is just a full-on character.
Yeah, that's from the moment he gets there to the moment he leaves. Yeah. Like, we all should do that, you know? That's what separates, you know, the professionals from the non-professionals, the guys who really take that, you know?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah. Oh, man, that was an amazing... I'm just thinking of the great hashtags I can put on Twitter with the hashtag rapey. Anyways, so things in the IWA were going well for you. And at one time, too, true or false, Bull was kind of pushing you as the top caliber guy for the IWA, correct?
Yeah, he was.
That is true, okay.
Because,
see, that's where I remember first seeing you on Community 21. It seemed that he was pushing you to the top.
Actually, my first year or two with the IWA, I had a lot of fun. Like, he brought the kids' class back, and then I started actually being the trainer for the kids' class, which was also a really dumb idea. I was 18. I should not have been doing that, but it was Mirror Bull. So at that point, I just kind of... But I had a lot of fun with that, and then that eventually... I don't even know how many people actually know this. But then that transferred to me actually being the trainer for the adult class as well. So I ended up doing them both. Bull put a lot of trust in me at that time, and Bull was actually paying me well at that time. Like, literally, like, I know that sounds weird, because a lot of people were like, Bull Miller paying... Bull was actually paying me well at that time to help. Like, he was giving me a percentage of what the guys are paying to be trained and everything. Like, he was giving me half. So,
okay.
So my first two to three years, no, I wasn't there that long. I think I left when I was 20. So, yeah, my first 2 years there, it was fine. And then my last 6 months or so, I kind of, is when everything went downhill. But, yeah, he was pushing me well. I had a good match with Mark Mattis. Yeah. I had a good match with him. He was pushing me well at that point, and then just kind of all.
What happened? What happened? Why did it just? You know, you said your last 6 months were not very
just,
good.
I don't know. It was just the same thing that happens with everybody.
Oh, okay.
Bull basically gets to you. I mean, Elliot Whitescarver. He put this the best way that that I think anybody really has. I don't think Bull is a bad person at all.
Oh.
He said, this was his exact words. I don't think Bull is a bad person. I just don't think he's very smart. So, he doesn't mean to do the things he does, but then things just start happening, and then things can be going one way. Like, I'll just tell you, we had something planned out for the heavyweight title run, and we had it planned out for a good 6 months, and then 2 months into it, he decided he wanted to change everything, And then that just kind of, I was like, why are you doing that type thing? Because we already set the wheels in motion to go one way.
Sure,
and then you want to take a left-hand turn and just make everything, make as much as anything could make sense in the IWA. But that's like my big thing in wrestling. I would do anything that anybody asked me to do. I mean, hell, I've wore a dress in wrestling. But I just want it to make sense.
Right.
And once things stop making sense and things stop being fun, I don't want to really be involved with it anymore, and that's pretty much what happened.
Okay.
Things just weren't fun there anymore, and I was getting to a point where I think this is going to sound really, but where I think I was better than it, so I just needed something, a different challenge, a different...
Sure, yeah. No, that doesn't sound arrogant to me at all, or egotistical. I think that makes perfect sense. Yeah. So from there, after you left IWA, where'd you go?
Just various companies, around Ohio and like the West Virginia area, but I kind of made my home at WWC in Southern Ohio.
Right, okay.
It was being ran by Jeremiah Young at that time, and I had a lot of fun there. I started there, I think, when I was 20, so around 2009 or so. I had a really good match, my first match ever, with the astonishing Aaron Williams there. And that pretty much opened the door for me to go to HWA. And then that's pretty much where that took off from, yeah.
And is that where, in HWA, that's where the Noble Bloods
started, correct? That's where it was a rough 8 months for me there. But once the Noble Bloods kind of took off,
Let's talk a little bit about the backstory of that. How did that all come about? How did the Nobles come about? Chad was an IWA guy, right?
Chad was one of my only students that actually stuck with it.
Okay.
Chad is my only teaching claim to fame in this business, and I think I did a pretty good job with it.
Yes.
He started in the IWA with me. I was his trainer and everything, and then Chad went to another tour of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came back, and then I was like, hey, I'm doing HWA, come on down. And then that's pretty much how that happened. But, I went from WWC to HWA because my match with Aaron, and Aaron liked me so much. He's like, hey, I'm going to put in a word for you with them. And then HWA was actually starting there, what everybody calls HWA 2.0. Because they shut down and they...
Right. I was going to ask you if that was the post-Les Thatcher era, correct?
It was... Okay. Les was... I think he came a couple times, but he was there. But he wasn't there. It was ran primarily by Chris the Brain and GK. It started out... It was... Lord, I'm getting my dates all mixed up. Because I know that was September 2008 when that started back up. So that's probably around the same time I started at WWC then. I don't know. It's all starting to run together.
So how did the actual gimmick of the Noble Bloods come about? Because if I remember correctly, you were affiliated with another wrestler down there, correct? With HWA or no? Wasn't there Andre Hart was involved?
All right. You know, I'll just tell the whole... I got to HWA when they first restarted at the Sorg Opera House.
Okay. Which has no toilet paper, I learned.
It does not have any toilet paper. You have to bring your own.
Yeah.
It is a... the building got condemned for good reason. We shouldn't have been there as long as we were. But it was a cool building, though. Like, it had an awesome backdrop and everything. But it was terrible, terrible place to do any kind of wrestling because it's an opera house. So noise really doesn't go anywhere.
Right.
And there were so many seats that people would just sit everywhere. So even if you got like 300 people in there, it looked like five. Okay. But pretty much, Brain says I'm a Chris Tabrain guy, but I wasn't at first. He had no idea what to do with me at all. For the first like 6 months there, I lost. I lost everything. But I got to work with John Mox. I got to work with Dave and Jake Chris. I got to work with Aaron Williams. I got to work with so many great, talented guys, and that helped me learn so much on a weekly basis being in the ring with those guys. But I lost, literally. I drove there every week from Columbus to Middletown, Ohio, every single week for pretty much 6 to 8 months, and I did not win a single match. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to come up with an idea. And I wanted to do a storyline with Hardcore Heather Owens. Okay. Because I figured that if this girl could get time on there, so could I. And that was pretty much, that was my legit thought. I was like, I'm better than her. And if she's getting time, you know, so I pretty much took my actual thoughts and put it in there. And then Brain was like, you know what? This is a really good idea. You can go out there. You can be in the crowd. You can heckle her. You can say, hey, oh, they're wasting time with her. But how would you feel about wearing a dress? You know what, Brain? If it gets me more time on there and actually something to do, I will wear a dress. I said, okay. So we pretty much set up this thing where we did a hardcore match because that's her gimmick. And if I lost, I would have to wear a dress for 30 days. So we we had this possibly the worst match I've ever had in my entire life.
Really?
Yeah. I can't hit a girl. I'm not. That's like an odd story.
Okay. So that's kind of the mindset.
Yes, that's the mindset I have in life. And then it's just so awful. And me trying to hit her with weapons makes it even worse.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty much, this match ends with her. It was supposed to be her hitting me with a steel chair, but for some reason, the only chair she found was a padded chair.
Okay.
So it's just, whatever. It's stupid. So I get hit with this chair and I get put in the dress and I'm in the dress for 30 days. And then Brand's like, I don't know what to do with you. You're in a dress now. I was like, I'm bringing Chad down. You're not doing anything with Chad. Just put us in tag matches together. We can have fun. I can, you know, act like I don't have the dress on. I can cover it up with a hoodie. Then you can threaten to disqualify me if I don't show the dress.
Okay. All right.
So that's pretty much how that started. And then we started to have really good tag matches. And then that was pretty much my plan all along. It's like, I'm going to get you to where you guys can actually see me wrestle and put me in an opportunity where you can actually see that I'm actually, you know, good at this instead of putting me in these matches with guys like John Moxley, which is essentially a squash match at that point. So I really can't showcase what, you know, I can do at that point. But what I wanted to do was getting obviously into a point where I could show them that. So I knew that getting involved in tag matches, because they really didn't have any tag teams at that point in time, because Jake Crist was their heavyweight champion at the time, and Dave was just coming back from his knee injury, I think. And then so they had no tag team, so I was like, you know what? I'm going to make a tag team, and then I'm going to show you what I can do. And that's pretty much all that happened. We started doing that, and we ended up feuding with Brian Beach and Ron Mathis. And
okay.
Working with Beach is always fun.
Okay.
So
where did I come up with Andre Hart? Where did that come
from? I'm getting there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm taking the long way around.
That's
okay. I'm taking the long way around.
No problem. My bad.
But they got to a point where even though we were putting on these good matches, they still didn't have any idea at all what to do with us. And then they came up to me and they were like, you know what? We're going to start pushing Andre Hart towards the heavyweight title, and we need somebody to go with him, and we're going to take Chad. And that pissed me off. I was like, oh, okay. So then I pretty much got this giant chip on my shoulder, and then I was like, you know what? If you guys don't have, you know, anything else to do with me, why am I even here? Just give me this opportunity. I will show you that, you know, I can do this. They were like, all right, you know what? Fine. You can go with Chad. You guys can both go. You can be in his group, the Love Connection, which how Andre ended up. That's a terrible name.
Yeah.
But we were in that group for 3 weeks. And then Andre got signed to the WWE
okay.
as a referee. And then they were like, we don't know what to do with you.
Did you ever get tired of hearing that from those guys?
Yes, I mean, yes. And then they decided what they were going to do. They were going to turn Andre's tag partner, which was Deja Vu, Richard Phillips, and do King Vu. And they were going to just kind of push me and Chad towards him. And they were like, you guys are just going to keep the name the Love Connection. You're just going to be his henchman now. I'm not sure if you've seen Vu. Vu doesn't really need henchmen.
Yeah, because he's a very 6'4". Large gentleman.
At that point, he was 6'4", over 300 pounds. He's the boss weight now. But
But
I was like, you know, that's fine. But the name was stupid. You want to come up with this king gimmick? You need something that matches it. So I was racking my brain forever. Then I finally asked my putty that I grew up with, and he came up with the name the Noble Bloods, and that's pretty much where that came from, because it went along with that whole gimmick, and then we were off and running from that point on.
And you were, how many times were HWA tag champs?
Three times.
Okay, because I was gonna say I thought it was two, but I wasn't sure.
That was a long road too.
Really?
So, yeah, although we were off and running, we were still being held and pushed back. Because at that point, Vu beat Jake Chris for the heavyweight title. That's when everything, I'm pretty sure I helped him. And that's where we all came together. But that opened the door for the Irish Airborne to come back and do the tag scene.
Okay.
And then...
And how was working with those guys?
It was...
Is it challenging?
It was a learning experience. It was a lot of fun. I'm not gonna lie.
Sure.
It was a lot of fun. We started working with them, like, the first actual tag... Like, we worked with Dave a lot, because Dave didn't have a thing to do at all either, because his brother was the heavyweight champion.
Right.
So we worked with Dave a lot. He would rotate in to tag partners, whether it be like Dustin Reyes or John Moxley. They just kept going in and out. Then finally, our first like actual tag match that we had with them was at the Sorg. We were no longer in the Opera House. The Sorg was like five stories. We were all the way at the top, and that's where we started running shows from. The first actual tag match we had with Dave and Jay Christ, we went over 35 minutes, and at one point in this match, we didn't actually start the match in the ring, we just started fighting everywhere, and then at one point, Jake says, "I'm going up to the balcony," and then he disappears, and then Dave was like, he said, "What?" He said he's going to the balcony. And Dave said, "Okay." Dave hits me. Now, Jake took the long way around. Dave said, "You know what? I'm just going to climb straight up to the balcony." So Dave just kind of climbed straight up to the balcony.
A la Spider-Man. Okay.
And me and Chad are looking at each other. We're going, "They're going to jump on us, aren't they?" "Yep, they're going to jump on us, aren't they?" So Dave, as soon as Dave gets up there, Dave doesn't turn around, because why would he? He's a good 15 to 20 feet in the air, and he has his back to us. So he's going to do a back... Dave proceeds to do a moonsault off this 20-foot balcony onto us, and we catch him. And then Jake Christ appears. We're like, awesome. So then Jake... But Jake, you know, was not like his... He is more cautious than Dave is.
Okay.
So Jake just does a very simple, "I'm just going to jump down on top of you guys," and that's... pretty much what that was. And then after that point, we finally get into the ring after about 25 minutes of fighting on the outside. Then we actually finally go into our finish from there. We go crazy at that point. And it was fun. But that pretty much, we took a month off from working with each other at that point. And then they ended up winning the tag titles in January. And then we ended up working with them again in February, and that's when we ended up beating them for the tag titles, and that started our year and a half run of feuding with the Irish Airborne.
Okay, yeah. All right. And from there, not only working HWA, but were you working other places as well? Because was WWC still running?
I was doing WWC, I was doing NWA, I don't remember, it was NWA something, then I was doing IPW as well.
Okay.
And then...
that's out in Indiana, correct?
Yes. Okay. And then there's a couple other places there. I can't really think of them right now, but yeah, I was pretty much at that point in time, I was wrestling 3 to 4 times a week, and then...
Okay, and then, you know, you've been mentioning all the different promotions that you have been affiliated with, and then you came to OCW.
Yes.
Which, that was, what, 2010?
Yeah.
Maybe 2010. Mm-hmm. Chad and you came over as OCW at that time.
Not at first.
Oh, that's right, not at first, you're at right, first. Because yep. There was a Rittman show. Mm-hmm. That you worked solo.
Yes. And Jeff, man, he was hard on us, man. Jeff likes his guys. And then it took Jeremy a long time to actually...
That is true.
It took Jeremy a while to convince Jeff to actually bring me in. And then at that point, it was even harder to kind of get Chad in there.
That's true. Because I forgot that you did work. You worked at one Rittman show. I think you worked another show too, solo too, didn't you?
I did Rittman alone, and then I did Newark alone.
Yeah.
But that was like 4 months apart.
Right.
And then, I don't even remember when she, like, and I did, yeah, hold on, wait. Yeah, I did Rittman alone, Newark alone, then Coshocta alone, then we came back to Newark, and that's when we finally did the tag match.
Right.
Me
right,
and Chad versus right. the Heat Seekers.
Right, exactly.
A lot of fun. That was one of my favorite matches I've ever been involved with it all.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's, you know what? That takes a question off the table. I was going to say, who are some of your favorite opponents you've taken on?
At OCCW? Or just
anywhere.
Anywhere?
Anywhere.
Obviously, always working with Jeremy and Caden was always a blast. It's just fun. Dave and Jake, always fun. My favorite opponent that I've ever been in the ring with is the astonishing Aaron Williams, though. We've always, no matter what, if it was back in 2009 all the way up till now at Rockstar, we've always had great matches together, great chemistry. It's always been.
It's just one of those things that clicks with you, right? You hear that.
It's easy.
Right. It's not cliche because you hear people say that in wrestling, but it is that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And then OCW just were on a roll with the tag team titles for a very long time. That's you're the OCW Heritage Champion.
I am.
Going solo. How's been the transition to go from such being part of a tag team for such a long time to being
A
solo wrestler? Is there a transition or no?
Hey, I love tag team wrestling. I do. Mm-hmm. But I'm like it goes back to my thing that I said with the IWA. I get bored and I want to do something different. I want to prove myself. I always want to keep moving forward, and I've always known that I can be a singles guy.
Okay.
So getting to actually prove it, I love that. And okay. It's a lot of fun.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. I will give you a compliment because, and I think that this is a great compliment for a wrestler. The Matt Taylor that is sitting next to me, the Matt Taylor who has rode with me to shows and is backstage, incredibly easygoing dude.
Yeah.
However, when it's go time. And I'm not trying to embarrass you. You just get, I don't know, you turn into Dark Star Matt Taylor. You know what I mean? Like, you get focused, and I think that's a great thing. I really admire that about you.
Yeah.
Not trying to kiss up or anything like that. But it really is. Like, when I announce you and hear you come, it's like, man, that dude looks like he's just got bad intentions on his mind. When you come through the curtain, it's that change. It's like flipping that switch, which I think is a good thing. I think that every wrestler should be able to do that, and in the indies, you don't sometimes see that.
I work very hard to be two different people.
Okay.
I want to be me. I want to be just regular Matt. And then once it's time to be Matt Taylor, I want to be the best Matt Taylor that I can possibly be. So that's pretty much where that kind of runs. And I don't like it when the two become one and the same, because that's when you get your real assholes in the business. And people would take it, you know, way too serious at that point. Mm-hmm. So... yeah, I work. Thank you. I mean, I work very hard on that.
Yeah, cool. Well, let's talk about a couple of other things, because here's one thing I saw today online.
Yes.
I want to get your since we are all fans. That's how we got into this.
Yes.
Okay. There was a quick article I read on some wrestling website about some guy wrote. In fact, it was 401 Wrestling, 401mania.com's wrestling page. They were talking about the 10 things that WWE needs to bring back.
Yes.
Or focus on.
Okay.
Now, while some of these, I think, are just ridiculously preposterous, like quite frankly, brand separation, I don't care.
No.
Better writing. Every wrestling company needs better writing.
Oh, of course.
I mean, I don't care who you are.
If you're not trying to improve, then what are you?
Exactly. But here's a couple that I thought were really interesting. So I'm going to throw them out there. You give me your take on it. Okay. The War Games match.
No.
You don't think they should bring that back?
I think it's outdated.
Really?
And I think they updated it with the Elimination Chamber.
Okay.
So,
okay. Valid point.
And when, like, the War Games concept was so cool at the time.
Sure.
Because you had the Four Horsemen to actually, and you always had that team there that you could always build against and build up to, you know. And the entire year, you had that buildup of all these guys trying to take down the Four Horsemen. Then you got to War Games. You're like, yes, they're all going to be the same ring at the same time. They're taking them out. Then that even transitioned to with the NWO. So,
sure,
you always had that team that you could go against, but you don't really have that now.
Even the Shield.
Now you could.
Sure.
But that's just recent. They came in, you know. So.
Okay. How about the King of the Ring?
I think they should bring that back. I was sad when they
got rid of it, to be honest with you.
They bring it back randomly now. They do it on their 3-hour Raw specials, everything. But Raw is 3 hours now. So.
Yeah.
They bring it back randomly now, and I think they do it more or less now to get a guy over.
Yeah.
So.
But that was a great pay-per-view. I loved King of the Ring.
So did I.
I mean, it was awesome.
One of my favorite pay-per-views that I ever went to live was the King of the Ring here. In
where Lesnar won? Yeah, I was there too. Awesome. Yeah, well, yeah, it was good. It was real good. One that, here we go, one that I've talked about for a long, long time, meaningful mid-card titles. Because I don't think the Intercontinental title or the U.S. title really means as much as it could.
I'm
going
to tell you this. I understood when they had, like, the world title, the WWE title, the United States, and the IC belt when the brands are separated. Now that they're together again, they just need to unify them. There's just too many, and they don't mean anything. I don't think the WWE title or the heavyweight title means as much anymore because you've got them both. And then, so not only do they need more meaningful head card titles, they just need more meaningful titles because I didn't win the WWE title. I'm going to go win the heavyweight title. So,
yeah, no, I agree. And yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with that. But I, even in previous years with the brand separation, I don't think that they've been, like, I remember, Cincy, and I remember when the Intercontinental title was really meant to build somebody for a giant push, whether they won the world title or not. And I just think nowadays are just, you know, I don't know.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. Okay, and that's pretty much it, because the rest of these, you know, the Cruiserweight title, who cares?
Well, they're doing the Cruiserweight show.
Are they?
Yes, they're doing it, so that might actually happen.
Oh, really? I missed that.
Yeah, once the WWE network finally takes off, they're doing a show of just Cruiserweights, so I imagine you're going to have a belt at that point.
Oh, I imagine so, too. That would be awesome. Be awesome. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about where you're going to be. It's time to shill stuff, if you will. Tomorrow, you're going to be in XWE.
Yes, I am.
Which is down in Nelsonville, Ohio. I'm actually going to go just as a fan. I'm going to get to be a fan of indie wrestling for once.
That's exciting, isn't it? That's always fun. It's always fun to actually go to a show and just sit and watch.
Just sit and, like a couple weeks ago, Ring of Honor. Yes. You were there.
I was there.
How did? By the way, side note, how did you manage being able to help out? How did that happen?
I went to Philly for their tryout back in April, and then I talked to Kevin Kelly, and we've been exchanging emails back and forth and everything, and then he just said, hey, show up to the Columbus show. We're going to be there. Show up, come help out, and get your face seen and really try to make connections, and we'll see where it goes from there and everything. So that's pretty much how that happened.
Did you manage to kind of, I don't know, hobnob some backstage or no?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. How were the guys?
Oh, good.
They were all good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Lots of fun.
All right, Matt Mason has mentioned that there's one in particular person that may be a little bit grouchy in the back, but, you know.
Who are you talking about?
Old Davey Richards.
Davey Richards, man. I didn't talk to Davey a single bit. Davey got there, and Davey pulled out a cell phone. I don't think Davey actually got a phone call, but I don't think Davey wanted to talk to anybody, so he acted like he was on his cell phone. He just kind of blew past everybody and went and sat by himself. So
okay.
I didn't see the grouchy Davey, I just saw the Davey that didn't want to be involved in anything at all. All
right. Okay. All right. Well, that's cool. That's cool. I thought the show was really good. What's your thought?
I've went to Ring of Honor shows, and I had so much fun there, like, from 2002 to 2005, and then I think I always went to, like, the Dayton shows. So then I think they started taking that as, like, their warm-up show for the Chicago show, so the Dayton shows kind of got to a point where they were just kind of taking it easy, but the Columbus show, they went all out, and it was a lot of fun.
I thought it was really good. I thought the two opener, the two quote opening matches, if you will, Adam Cole and was it Caprice Coleman? Yes, yeah, Caprice. That was a really good opening.
Definitely.
Yeah. Really good opening. Yeah. I thought that even QT Marshall and Roderick Strong was pretty good.
Oh, very good, yes.
Yeah. I think Davey Richards and Cedric Alexander was misplaced.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because I think that they spent the crowd, and then the crowd was like, eh, there's another match. We don't care. We want to go to intermission. You know,
Davey may have did that on purpose.
Sure, maybe. But I thought overall, I thought the main event was really good.
Oh, it was amazing. And not only that, but the match before that was the crazy, like, six-man tag all over the place. So how they paced that match?
Yes.
Or the main event, perfect. That match was...
Overall, I think it was one of the better Ring of Honor shows I've seen in a while. Because much like you, I would go to the Dayton shows, and there have been some sketchy Dayton shows where I've gone, what the hell did I just pay money for this? This was not very good, so.
I think even, Steve Carino one date, and she even kind of joked about that.
Really?
Yeah, he was cutting a promo saying, "Hey, we're going to be in Chicago tomorrow night, so why should we care about this?" I know it's Steve Carino being Steve Carino, but
yeah.
I was like, "There's some truth to that, isn't there, Steve?"
Yeah, there is, and I think that he's a bright spot on the television product.
Let me blow your mind,
sure,
for a second. That we're going to go back to that Columbus show, and okay. I everybody who I tell this to goes, "You're right." Steve Carino was involved in every aspect of that show. He did a pre-show segment with Matt Hardy.
He did.
He commentated the first half of the show.
Yeah.
He managed the next three matches on the second half of the show. Then he cut a promo to end the show. Yeah. Involved in every aspect of that show. That man is amazing. I love Steve Carino.
I do, too. I'm a big fan. And let me tell you, Yellow Jacket, badass.
Amazing, right?
It was. I was like, I so would love to steal that jacket. If it would fit me. I don't know. I think he's a little bigger than me.
Steve, yeah, much bigger, but it's okay. Steve is as cool as he is on screen, off screen.
Even really?
Cooler. Really cool dude, yeah. One of my favorite people.
I tell the story that, and this, I make no bones about it, I was a UGCW mark. And the best thing about ECW for me was that they would debut a guy and you go, "This guy sucks." Mm-hmm. 3 weeks later, you were like, "Oh!" And Steve Carino was a prime example of it. Like, I was like, "This guy is terrible. What the fuck?" And then, like, 3 weeks later, I'm like, "Man, Steve Carino's badass!" You know, I don't know.
Paul Heyman, man.
Paul Heyman
is a genius. And Paul Heyman, I think, man, does not get enough credit.
I do, too. I agree. Just
what he created was so little, you know?
Right.
ECW was an indie fed. That's all it ever was. But he made you believe it was so much more.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Prime example, Taz. Taz, you thought Taz was the baddest man alive.
Right.
Taz goes to the WWE, you're like, eh.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with you 100%.
Paul Heyman's a genius.
Yes. All right, we got off on a tangent. But yes, okay, let's talk about XWE Supremacy. I'm going tomorrow. Gonna hang out, gonna watch the show. XWE Supremacy. Oh. Wait a minute.
I don't know what it's called. I'm sorry.
It doesn't matter. Where do I need to be? Huh? Vince, where's my plane tickets? Okay. Yeah. You know.
I wish.
Anyways, it's the XWE Supremacy, the Corey Smathers Memorial Show.
Yes.
It's in Nelsonville, Ohio, 8 p.m. at the Hockington College Student Center.
Yes.
I hear it's a nice venue.
It's an amazing venue.
I've heard that. In fact,
amazing venue. I love it there.
The phrase WCW mid-90s house show setup
has been used. That's exactly what it feels like.
Gotcha.
Just, man, like, I don't know what it is, man, but I've wrestled in that area, the Nelsonville area, like, pretty much for the last 5 years or so, and just something about those crowds just suck the energy out of you. It's like they don't care, but sorry.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, then. I'm not going to lie. You got me on that one. I wasn't quite expecting that comment.
I'm just saying. I'm just going to tell you. Like, literally, you'll get a lot of people in there, but they're just like, I'm not going to clap. I'm not going to do that.
Are they Japanese?
I'm not going to have fun here. I don't get that. I don't get going to a wrestling show and not having fun. Like, literally, at their 10-year show. No, you know, sorry, I'm going to go on another tangent. Then we're going to go back to this.
Oh, that's fine.
I did a show for Hatchet in that same area.
Okay, Hatchet. I remember Hatchet. Yeah,
drew over 500 fans in that area. There was a match between Thumbtack Jack and Mammy and Pondo. It was a fishhook match. A fishhook death match.
So let me guess, you use fishhooks to
try to... you fishhook your opponent. They had at least 7 fishhooks in their mouth. The crowd's like, no, I'm not making a noise. I'm not clapping. I'm not saying ooh. I'm not doing anything. Like, literally, that's. I mean, I have fun at these shows, but for some reason, these crowds just like, no. I'm not. No, I'm not clapping.
Wow.
I'm not reacting.
I gotta be honest. I'm so looking forward to this now. I mean, not only was I looking forward at the card and going, hey, there's some solid matches here, but now I'm looking forward to this crowd reaction. Mm-hmm. All right. Anywho, well, you're involved in the big Powerball on a Pole match.
No idea what that is.
That's a common comment that is made when I mention this. Jimmy Molloy, Joey Vengeance, Juice Jennings, yourself, Matt Connard, Jeremy Madrox, you're all involved in it. The winner that gets the Powerball ends up getting a future title shot.
It's not a tag match?
That's not the way it's written here. See all the verses in between? Yeah, so.
I got it.
No, it's I don't think it's a tag match. Doing.
We've just been, you know.
Now, my question is, I want to see the Powerball.
It better be a red, like, dodgeball. And it better... I really hope so.
I was hoping it was like an ABA-colored basketball. You know, the red, white, and blue one?
I don't know. Like, they... I was... You know, I hope... Corey, I hope you listen to this. I was booked at a ladder match there a few months back, and they could not figure out how to hang the belt. So that ladder match got changed into just a street fight. So I'm really wondering if they know how to hang the Powerball, or if this Powerball is going to turn into like a dodgeball match. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's going to be fun.
That would be sweet. If it is a dodgeball, if you had like six balls in there,
last man standing dodgeball. Yeah,
exactly. That would be sweet. I was also thinking in my mind, if it is the old ABA red, white, and blue basketball, they should play the Harlem Globetrotters, Sweet Georgia Brown, through the whole entire match.
Yes, they should.
That would be epic.
They should. Yeah,
but again, the crowd probably wouldn't pop for that either, would they?
No, probably not.
You
made me feel really bad, by the way, for that. Like, you're like, Matt Taylor's a jerk for saying that crowd doesn't care.
No, I was not anticipating that. Like, in my mind, when we talk, there's things that go through my mind. I'm like, oh, man, what? You know?
Yeah, I literally tell that to everybody, though. That's that has always bothered me. I don't know why I let it bother me so much. I don't know.
Okay. All right, well, but anywho, you're involved in the Powerball and a pole match.
Yes.
All right. And
no idea what that is.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, well, is there any other matches on the card that you're looking forward to?
We got
the XWE Championship, Dirk Extreme versus Tommy Chill versus Ron Mathis.
That
should be a pretty decent match. Definitely. That should be good, man. Jack Sam.
Mathis will kill himself, so any of his matches are always, you know, fun to watch.
I'll tell you this, and again, there might be people that go to a wrestling show and go, that guy, Ron Mathis, but that dude can go.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like he can go.
He can go.
With all due respect, Ron, he doesn't look like he can't go, but man, oh man, he can work circles around.
Over the last 2 years, his improvement has just amazed me.
Exactly. The dude is on it.
I
love him.
And not only that, just, I have such a passion for this business. I live it, I eat it, I breathe it. I've loved it since I was 2. My passion does not compare to his. He's literally the most passionate guy I've ever met about wrestling, ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it shows through.
Sure.
Yeah.
They got the XWE Hocking Valley Championship as Freebird Brian Cross will take on Genuine Jock Sampson. That will probably be an all-out brawl between those two guys. Mm-hmm. But Jock
will have half his family there, so.
Yeah, probably.
Which always makes it fun.
Sure. XWE Tag Team.
Nestleville, was it?
XWE Tag Team titles. Dane Stratmore and Nick Abbott will be taking on Pretty in Pink. I think Pretty in Pink are the champs, I believe.
I don't know.
I believe they are, so that should... I'm unfamiliar with those four, so I don't know. That should be an interesting matchup, maybe.
We'll see, I guess.
Okay. All right, and then we got Brandon Fields versus Damian Braddock.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And James Avery and Levi Connors against Zach Vincent and Bruce Gray.
Bruce has been entertaining the crap out of me. He's been showing up to... Rockstar, and just the transition from referee to what he is now.
I can't wait to see that.
I love
that.
It. It's a lot of fun.
I can't wait to see that.
He's entertaining the crap out of me.
Well, I'm going to shill this show because, again, I'm going to be down there. Mm-hmm. You're going to be down there. I mean, it sounds like it's going to be an interesting evening in Nelsonville. But if you are sitting at home and you're listening to this, you can get a hold of them at XWE Wrestling OH. That's their Twitter account. Mm-hmm. I know they have a Facebook account too, but I don't remember what the address is. But definitely tweet them at XWE Wrestling OH and you can get in touch with them. So, anywhere else you're going to be?
I think after that, my next booking is Rockstar. Next Wednesday, and then the War Show at. What fair is it?
Oh, I don't know. It's one of the
fair show.
One of the many.
Putnam County, maybe?
Putnam, maybe. I think so.
Yeah,
is that in Ottawa?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I'm just going to go there, and I'm going to wrestle.
Again.
That's what I do.
Vince, where's my plane tickets?
You're making me seem like a jerk right now. I appreciate that. Taylor's a cocky asshole. That's what we're taking from this.
No, I don't know. You're not. You're not a cocky asshole. Because I don't want to get a double stomp.
Too late now. I honestly think like my first 6 months at OCCW, I slapped you at least 4 times.
A couple of times.
Sorry for that.
That's okay, man. If it was a problem, I would come and talk to you about it. Seriously, you know, I'm not gonna be that. That's fine. It got you guys over. Mm-hmm. Got me some sympathy. That's all that matters.
Perfect.
You didn't hurt me. It's all good.
I didn't hurt you.
No.
I have to try harder next time.
No, I'm just kidding. All right. Where Twitter account before we get to wrapping things up here.
Oh, at DarkStarMT.
All right. Mm-hmm. And that's where you can get in touch and be interactive with Matt Taylor.
Or on the old book face.
The book face, yes. All right.
Facebook.
Yeah.
Either way.
The book of face.
The book of face, yes.
All right. Well, as we start wrapping things up, I'm going to do what I do every week, mm-hmm. Orlando's faves.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll enjoy this.
Excellent.
I only have one fave. And I have no excuse.
How is it plural, then?
Or it's Orlando's fave.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Because typically there's more than one. Anyways. My fave for this week is a book that, and I cannot explain why it took me 2 years to read this book. Because, one, I love wrestling biographies, mm-hmm. and it is one. Two, I love the subject. And that is, of course, The Road Warriors, Danger, Death, and the Rush of Wrestling, written by Joe Animal Laurinaitis. I love the Road Warriors. Mm-hmm. Love them. Greatest tag team ever. And that look means you and I would debate that.
Yes.
But in my mind, greatest tag team ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wrestling biography. I don't know why it took me forever to read, but I've read it over the last couple weeks, mm-hmm. and really good book. Really interesting stuff. I learned some cool things I did not know.
There's a lot of things with the Road Warriors that, if you listen to the Road Warriors, they will tell you a completely different story than their opponents will tell you. So, I don't know. I don't know them personally.
But you know what? I've heard that. Heard that too. And there are, I won't lie, there was a couple things that Joe wrote, and I'm like, wait a minute, that happened in that? I think that didn't happen
that when happened you said it differently, happened. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I'm real big on always making your opponent look just as good as you do, so I think that's why I've always had a problem with Road Warriors. I don't think they ever really made their opponents look as good as their opponents did for them, but you know,
they
were booked as that, so you know.
Yeah, I look at it sheerly from a fan, not from being in the industry. That when I saw them, I bought into
they,
what.
Yes, perfect. Then they did exactly what they were supposed
exactly,
to.
Exactly. But you're absolutely correct. Yeah. I will not debate that indeed that they went in there and took liberties and did what they wanted to do to protect that. Yeah. Particular image that they've created for themselves. And I think that was one of the interesting things about the book because, like, for an example, Animal does not speak very highly of their second run in the WWE.
When they
came
why.
Back. Yeah. Well, yeah. When they came back in, what, that was 97-ish, 98-ish.
Really? I thought you were talking about when they came back as Road Warriors 2000 or that.
Well,
was
that's
sunny.
Part of it. Yeah. Yes, that was part of it because they actually, the story goes that they came back in 97... They did a few shows, and then Hawk got popped again for being under the influence, and they had to sit out like 90 days. And then when they came back, that's when they were LOD 2000 with draws. And
I mean, did he not speak highly of it? Because at that point in time, they were putting over the Outlaws a lot, or
I
haven't
read
the book. I mean, I should. I read like all those and like. You said I should have read that book already. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the best one that you've read?
The best book I've read. I like Flair's a lot.
Yes, I thought Flair's was really good.
But my favorite is Chris Jericho's first book, Alliance Tale.
That's on my list. Yeah, it's on my list.
You haven't read Alliance Tale?
No, I haven't.
It's amazing.
I really want to.
Alliance Tale is amazing. His second one not so good because it's like he goes back and forth with chapters between the WWE and Fozzy, I don't really care that much. But
the one that I was really disappointed in, Jerry the King Lawler,
was that bad?
It wasn't.
I haven't read that one. Yeah,
it wasn't very good. You haven't read it yet?
I have not read that one.
He's the greatest thing that's ever happened.
Of course,
and a lot of drama about his wives, or I should say ex-wives. That's
a pretty long
much the whole
book, man. There's like five of them.
Exactly. So it's really, it's a snoozer.
Right.
Anyways, all right, with that, we're going to start wrapping things up.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, hit your Twitter account.
At DarkStarMT.
All right, you can also get in touch with me at PBDMVP on Twitter. Or if you want to shoot a quick email, pbdcast@mail.com. Matt, thanks for coming on. I appreciate
it, man. Yeah, a lot of fun.
I'm glad.
This experience was much better than my first one today, so thank you.
Yes! And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I will talk at each and every one of you later. Thanks for listening.